Whether you've been in business for years or are just a startup trying to find success in the world as it is and what it will be in the future, we're finding new ways of thinking you can apply to the rest of your life. Welcome to Creative Warriors. This is more than career goals. This is business with a soul. Now prepare to create, serve, and be prosperous with your host, Jeffrey Shaw.
Hey, Warriors. I'm very excited to have Doug Sandler with us today. We all know the phrase, nice guys finish last. Well, my guest today is here to tell us how with the right attitude and good practices, nice guys and gals can finish first. Every entrepreneur wears many hats every day. It can be overwhelming, unmanageable, and downright exhausting. 17 Hats is your all-in-one solution for contacts, projects, invoicing, calendar, and so much more. Eliminate the overwhelm and get back the time you want to be creative in your business. Be sure to check out 17 Hats. See the show notes or go to 17hats.com/warrior and get your free trial plus a lifetime 10% discount when you sign up. 17 Hats. Business just got easier. So welcome, Doug.
Well, thanks. It is great to be here.
Well, let me tell you all a bit more about Doug. Doug Sandler, also known as Mr. Nice Guy, is the author of the newly released book, Nice Guys Finish First, and created Nice Guys Finish First philosophy in an environment where too often people accept average as the norm when it comes to customer service. And way too often companies accept average from their sales and customer service departments. His philosophy, built on 30 years of industry experience, has always been to set huge expectations and exceed them. Doug shares his message all over the country with organizations and individuals in need of building more solid relationships with their customers. As an expert, Doug is a speaker, author, and blogger, specializes in exceeding service expectations. He will prove to you why nice guys and girls finish first. So Doug, before you share your amazing insights with us, we want to know a bit more about you personally. So what's the biggest pet peeve of a nice guy like you?
Sure. Well, thanks, Jeff. And I appreciate that great interview. It was read just the way my mom had written it. So I appreciate that very much. Pet peeve. I'll tell you, a huge pet peeve for me, and this is one that I'm sure that all of the listeners can relate to. Do you ever go into a store and you have, let's say it's a clerk at a grocery store, and they're checking out your groceries and they're not even paying attention to you. They're talking to their partner. They're talking to somebody that's bagging for you. And it's like, you're not even there. They may as well have that smartphone up in their face and text messaging and checking Twitter and their newsfeed and everything else. So pet peeve. Oh, I hate it when people don't pay attention to what's going on in life or around them.
That's great. And they often do have their smartphone on their face.
They do. That's exactly what they do.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever received, a meaningful quote or a favorite book that you would offer to inspire us, and why?
Wow, that's a great one. Okay, so I would have to say that the best piece of advice that I was ever given was probably from a business perspective from my dad was probably it's okay to fail. I am truly one of those guys that has failed my way all the way to success. And if you embrace failure, if you're okay with it, there's a difference between failing and quitting. Failing is maybe not accomplishing your goal at first. Quitting is giving up at that point. But a true failure will continue on and on and on until they eventually hit that success. And I've hit a number of them in my life, and I've been very, very fortunate and blessed.
That's terrific. So what inspired you to write such a book called Nice Guys Finish First?
Well, have you ever had that experience where you called your credit card company and immediately when you called the company, you realized you were a 16-digit number? We have all had that experience. And at some point in my life, I got fed up by that. Now, it's very serendipitous how things happen in life. I met with my financial planner in February of 2013 because he's somehow managing the 3 cents that I've managed to save over the last 30 years of being in business. And he said, "Hey, Doug, I don't mean to burst your bubble here, but my background is in entertainment as a DJ." And he says, "You know, you're in a business. You're 48 years old. You're in a business that's dominated by 22-year-olds. You need to figure out what that next step is supposed to be in your life." And at that point, something switched in my brain, and I just said, "You know, he's right. You know, I don't really have a plan for where the next step is as an entertainer. I need to figure out what is going to happen." So I said that probably the closest jump from entertainment to speaking, you know, the, or the closest jump in what I'm doing would be from going to entertainment to speaking professionally. And as soon as I met with a speaking coach, they had mentioned after probably a 5-minute conversation, she had said, "Hey, you have a book in you. You need to begin that book, and that will really help inspire the people that you're speaking to want to get more information about you." Originally, the book came as a result of trying to be a catalyst into getting more speaking engagements. And boy, has that been the case. It's no longer I'm speaking and promoting the book. It's now the book is promoting me, because I feel like the time has come. This message, it's landed on the right ears. And a lot of people are, "Where have you been for the last 20 years?" It's such a great feeling to be embraced by people in the public and saying, "We love this message. Tell us more."
So you mentioned being a DJ, but an entertainer. So I think it would be helpful to have more context to the book to understand a little bit more about your entrepreneurial journey. So can you kind of give us a synopsis of the past 30 years of your career?
Sure. So in 1984, I started as a part-time DJ at a local bar where I went to school at University of Maryland in College Park. And from that point on, the seed of controlling an environment began, and I loved the idea of DJing. And I had always DJed part time, just to, you know, it was just to pick up party money, and then it became a way to pay some bills part time. And something happened in the mid 90s when I hired an agent to represent me. That became I was making more money on my Saturday nights than I was working 40 or 50 hours a week in the real world of corporate America. I had to make a decision because I couldn't work 7 days a week. So what happened is it took over my income. And from there, starting in the late 90s, I really focused on building a business the way that I would want to be treated as a customer. I put all of the business philosophy that you learn in school aside and said, what as a customer would I like most about a provider of services? And the answer was, I just want to be treated like a human being. So the philosophy was born in 1998. It really wasn't until getting some heavy duty experience under my belt of owning my own business, running a company, training people, hiring people, firing people, all of the things that you go through, that the idea of nice guys finish first, while I still had it in my brain of, you know, the philosophy that in order to get what you want, you need to do it by being nice rather than an iron-fisted leader. So for me, the whole philosophy really did come out of 30 years of business experience, full-time, I would say in the late 90s, up to today. I have not, the joke is I'm gainfully unemployable. I don't think I could go to work for somebody anymore, because if you take a policy and procedures manual, that's like the worst thing that you can show me is somebody that's got all of these things that they have to do in order to stay employed at a company. It's not that as though those things are bad, but I think that policies and procedures manuals are good guidelines, but not necessarily for me the way that I want to run my business.
Got it. And in the book, you identify four common characteristics amongst people offering exceptional customer experiences, which I think will be really valuable for our community of warriors. So I'd love to touch on each of these four common characteristics. The first being exceeding expectations. So tell us what you mean by that.
Well, it's funny you say that, Jeff. On my computer right in front of me, there is a little sign and it says, "Set unrealistic expectations and then exceed them." So the philosophy behind that is that we are, as human beings, we are people pleasers. We all want to make sure that the person that we're talking to or dealing with in business and personally, we make them happy. Exceeding expectations is the problem that we have is that we are oftentimes in a position of overpromising and underdelivering. We want to please people, so we want to tell them what we think that they want to hear. The problem is that when we don't come through with that, somebody says, "Hey, I will promise you that I will do this for you. I will send that memo out. I will pick that person up. I will be there at 11:15, whatever they say." If they don't fulfill that, they're doing a couple things. Number one, they're breaking a promise. That's a code. They're breaking a promise. But the other thing is they're ticking away at the relationship that they have built with you. So if you want people to trust you, exceed their expectations. If you say to somebody you're going to be there at 11 o'clock and you show up at 10:45, great. So you'll wait 15 minutes for them. But at 11 o'clock, if they're not there, they're not respecting your time. So that's what I mean when I say, setting unrealistic expectations over exceed what you your person that you're dealing with expects you to do.
It's fantastic. The next, which was truly one of my favorites and I think often overlooked, was consistency and being consistent.
Well, if you're not consistent, people aren't going to know what to expect from you. So I have been represented as a DJ, and I still am a DJ, and I've been doing this job, let's call it. I can't believe it's a job because it's so fun. I get to party for a living and people pay me. That's wonderful. The consistency thing is when I joined this agency, I just said in my brain in 1998 when I signed that contract to be represented by that agent, I will be consistent with all of my actions. Whatever I do, I'm going to consistently do it. I'm only going to get better. There's not going to be any takebacks. And if you're consistent with your actions and the things that you say and the things that you do, people will grow to expect, let's go back to the expectation, people will grow to expect that from you. If I have a customer calling the agency today and they say, hey, we haven't heard from Doug yet. We've called him 3 times. If the agency hears that, they undoubtedly will know that that is not the truth because there is no way somebody's going to call me and I'm not going to return that phone call. So they verify, do you have the right phone number for Doug? Are you sure you're calling Doug? Or let me reach out to Doug. They know darn well that call has been returned if that customer's ever made that call. So that's consistency is essential to grow trust with a customer or with somebody that is, you're building a relationship with.
It's so fantastic. And I really want the whole community of warriors to hear that because in my own business, my own career, I have to say, I think consistency has been one of the primary reasons why I was successful as a photographer and as a coach. I think it's really important. So you actually, I want to dive into this even a little bit more because you talk about setting up systems. And I suspect that being a fan of systems, that it helps you be consistent. Is that true? And if so, tell us how.
Totally true. Totally true. Consistency leads into systems and creates good habits. Habits are created and they blossom out of having great systems, or systems are created as a philosophy of having great habits. Either way it goes, but you're winning on both sides. If you have a system in place and you explain this system to people that you're working with on a regular basis, whether it's, hey, here's how I return emails, here's how I return phone calls, here's how I get back in touch with you, here's the information that you're going to need from me. If you have a system in place, you're just plugging someone in. Now, the downside of a system, if you are not a relationship builder, the downside of a system is people will hide behind a system, and that's not good either. And when I say that, what I mean is if you have a system to return phone calls, but you're not a human being, you're just going through the process of returning a phone call or an email through rote. You're just repetition. And while it's great to be able to say, well, I returned all my phone calls and I returned all my emails, how about creating a human element in something? If you show emotion, you show empathy, you show sympathy, you show this air of relatability with someone, the system that you have in place will really create a winning effect, which is a better relationship, which ultimately is going to reward your business.
I think that's really important, the distinction you just made there, that you don't hide behind it. A very simple system that I use for myself and I suggest to my clients is using draft emails. I have stacks and stacks of draft folders of draft emails, which I find really helpful from the perspective so that nothing that's important that needs to be said gets overlooked. Right.
I think that's great.
Right. The mistake can be, as you say, it's not intended to be impersonal, so that's just a copy and paste and sent off, but that making sure it's a structure to make sure everything that needs to be said gets said and said at the right time in the process of working with a client. But I think that distinction you just made is really important, that it not become something that you hide behind when you're in a relationship building business.
And even if you're dealing with the impersonal side of social media, let's say, where there are a lot of faceless, nameless people and you're just, well, not nameless, but you're dealing with a handle as opposed to dealing with a person, there are a number of things that I do, for example, on LinkedIn when I get a connection request. How many people send out connection requests on LinkedIn, but they don't it's just a, I want to connect with you. And if you say yes, that's the first and the last time you ever hear from them. All you need to do is just make a small connection, even if it's just a template of a connection with, here's a bonus piece of information for connecting with me. How did you hear about me? Just ask a question. Just be a human being. It's so amazing that just by reaching out to people, developing a relationship with them, how explosive it will be for your business.
Yeah, it's fantastic. All right, so let's move on to the next common characteristic that you find amongst people offering exceptional customer experiences, and that is to inspire and wow them.
Well, you when we talk about a system of executing a plan, plan A, plan B, plan C, whatever it is, why do you just want to go through the process just to say that you did it? If you're going to do anything, you do it well. Get so good at it that people expect that you're going to be this this amazing outcome is going to happen. It is all about the experience. I really feel as though if we're not developing an experience with our customers, and it's not just the guy that's going to buy our end result product or service. It can be that person that's internal in an organization. If you work at a company of 20 and you have 5 people in your department or 4 people in your department and you're the 5th, wouldn't it be great to just have this amazing, amazing track record with them where everything is perfect? You can do that just by building a great relationship with them.
Right. I think it's a great distinction. I recently have embraced the idea of not just your ideal audience, but your ideal advocate.
Yeah, I right? love that.
It may not be the end user of your service or product, but who is working with your end user and how you can make them or you can seek them out as your ideal advocate.
And what's great about that is that on the large scale side, if you're a manager of an organization and you're responsible for not only the people that are in your organization, but you're responsible for the products that your organization represents, it is incredible the effect that a positive work environment will have on the actual sale of the product. If you empower people, if you give them the right choices, the right decisions to make, if you allow them some freedom to take some ownership, that's going to create that environment too. And it is great when you do that.
Most definitely. All right. And then the fourth and last common characteristics amongst people who are offering exceptional customer experiences is to get personal.
Yeah, well, that's my whole business philosophy is about getting personal. It's almost as though I don't even care what product or service that your company is selling. If you are a good relationship builder, you could transfer that knowledge of relationship building to any business and be a winner wherever you go. That's why people are successful in selling copy machines or cars or guitars. It doesn't matter what you're selling. If you're a good guy at building relationships, you are going to be good no matter where you go, even if it's not just selling. But if you're just a good people person, you have to learn how to do that. It doesn't mean that you have to be some people say, well, I'm introverted. I'm not really good with building relationships. Excuse me for a moment, but I don't care. you need to develop a style. It could be your style. But you need to develop a style that you're going to get good at relationships, because this world is all about connections and relationships. Very little has to do with product knowledge.
Yeah, I think that's a great distinction, because a lot of creatives, a lot of people in our audience do classify themselves as introverts. The fact of the matter is, introverts are actually really good at building intimate relationships. They just may not want to do it on a large scale, but they actually tend to be really good relationship builders.
And that's okay. I mean, I hate networking events. I hate it. I hate going into a crowded room and trying to make relationships happen in 10 or 15 or 20 seconds. I mean, that's very, very challenging. But you put me at a table where there's an educational conference going on, and you have 3 or 4 people at my table with me, or 10 people at the table, we'll be best friends before the end of the day, because I feel like I have time to talk to them, to understand what they're all about. I'm a small talk guy. I'm much better at building rapport than I am at puking product. I mean, I'd much rather have a relationship with somebody just about, you go to Disneyland, and then go on to a whole different conversation about Disneyland. That's what's going to end up winning the relationships in the business for you anyway.
And one of the really valuable ways you mentioned in the book about building relationship with your clients, which I think is so important, is understanding their perspective, like knowing what makes them tick. So tell us more about that, because I think it's really critical, as you said, is to really understand what makes your clients tick.
Well, we get hung up in our activity and in our world of of looking at everything through our eyes. And I create a very simple exercise when I'm doing keynote speaking, and it is I just have a hashtag on my on the screen on the slide that I'm bringing up, and I say, somebody tell me what this is, and it's, you know, it's a hashtag, so it's the tic-tac-toe board. So I say, well, what else does that represent? And, you know, ultimately I probably get 10 or 15 things out of the audience. It's a tic-tac-toe board, it's a pound sign, it's a hashtag. Three of those at the end of a press release means end. If you're an online chess player, that means checkmate. There are so many. If you're in the music world, that could be a sharp sign. If we look at that hashtag as we look at life, life is made up of everybody's perspective. So when we're dealing with a problem, a customer, an issue, something, and we have to step out of ourselves for just a moment and say, let me look at this through my customer's eyes. What are they seeing? What are they thinking? What are they feeling? And again, I use the word customer, not as necessarily the end result buyer of a product. But if you're walking into the accounting department and you have a problem with your paycheck, we need to see things from their perspective. They're very numbers, bits and bytes focused. And if we're in the sales department, we're just dollar focused. We want to know, hey, why did my check get screwed up? They're not necessarily looking at it from that perspective. So if we start to see things from other people's angle, we are going to, again, we're talking about relatability. We're talking about building relationships. And the best way to do that is to keep perspective on every situation.
So as a DJ, how are some of the ways that you understand the perspective, the needs of your clients? Because you're covering a huge range of celebratory events. So how have you gotten to really understand their unique perspectives?
Well, what's nice about it is I've been DJing, as I said, since 1984. So I spend very little time focused on the music and more time focused on the people. Music is music. If I'm doing an event for somebody or I'm doing a date and I have 3 hours to play music, they're asking me ahead of time what type of equipment I bring into the venue, what type of music. And it's not that those things aren't important, but I have the equipment and I have the music. They don't need to know that I have 30,000 songs in my database. They only need to know that I have the 27 that I have to play over those 3 hours to, or whatever that number is, to make their event go. So I think that it's really important for us to understand the perspective that they're coming from. It's important to know that as a guy that's running the party or running their event, that I'm in control and that I'm reading the crowd, I'm understanding what's going on in the world. It translates very well into business, not just the controlling the event side, but the entire business of setting up an event. Oftentimes in my world, in the world of entertainment, and there's hundreds of competitors that are in my neck of the woods, they forget that the event is not about that 2, 3, 4 hours that you're going to be with that customer. That event is about the year and a half of planning and preparation that goes up to that one day. So for me, the joke is I always tell my clients, listen, you're not hiring me because I'm the best DJ in town. There's only one of those guys. It may be me, but I'm not necessarily the guy that knows how to spin music any better than anybody else. But nobody is going to give them better customer service and better phone than I am. And that's where I really focus is that lead time right up until event day.
That's fantastic. Curious for a guy like you who has been in business as long as you have been, other than how the music has changed since the 80s till now, what are some of the ways that the attitudes or perspectives of your clients have changed just simply over the course of time?
Well, again, good question. I think that the basic premise of running an event has not changed at all. You know, the technology has changed the way that I bring music to them. You know, no longer records, no longer CDs, no longer cassette tapes or reel to reel. It's now just everything is on a laptop. Things have changed from a technology perspective. But when it comes down to it, and I hate to keep beating this up, but Jeff, I mean, the bottom line is that we are talking about relationships and people. People connect differently now. So it may no longer be a face-to-face meeting. Certainly there's a great to be able to do that. But in today's day and age, nobody has time to meet. They want to understand that you're available to them. So text messaging, email, Skype, certainly, if you want to try to have a face-to-face on Skype, that's great. All of these avenues, the way that music is brought to you, how quickly you can get music to an event. But I would say that technology has really made it so that we can connect closer to our customer. Again, the problem that a lot of people, that I find that a lot of the guys in my industry are dealing with right now, is that they're not controlling the technology. The technology is controlling them. So they're hiding behind Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, their email, voicemail. Wow, if I ever hear somebody say put them in voicemail, that is just, I mean, we'll talk about pet peeves. Don't ever put somebody that is calling you into voicemail. If you have the ability, if those words come out of your mouth, you had the ability to say to that customer, hey, can I call you back in 10 minutes? Again, expectations, everything, and over promising, under delivering. You better call them back in 8 minutes if you say you're going to call them back in 10. But technology has really brought us all together. Just don't hide behind it.
I think I would agree with you. I actually think technology in a lot of ways has brought us, it can bring us closer.
Sure.
I happen to love to exchange with my clients via email, because I find people actually say more in an email than they might say over the phone. And I think my own personal presentation is a little more casual in an email than I am on the phone. So I've also learned that is closer to my authenticity. But it's, as you said, it's not hiding behind it. It's actually using the technology that's available to our advantage. Another magnificent part of the book is that you list 5 mistakes that that a nice guy or nice gal would never want to make. So let's go over those.
Sure.
Some seeming more obvious than others, but can never be said too many times, especially the first one. The first one is failure to listen.
We don't listen as a society. We are so distracted by all of the things that are going on around us that we just don't focus on what is what's going on in our world. There's a philosophy called the fish philosophy. I don't know if you've read it or heard about it, Jeff. But
I have not.
If you haven't, definitely check it out, and your readers should as well, or your listeners should as well. It's the philosophy. Basically, one of the things says is be present. And it's so true. I think that people fail to listen. And if we focus on what our customer is saying, again, customer being anybody internally, externally, within the organization, you'll be in a really good spot. So you just listen. That's all. It's pretty simple. Listen there. And just so you know, on these 5 that we're just going to go over, there is no rocket science in this. This is a common sense. I think the reason that this book is doing so well is because people are getting it that I can do this. I understand it. I can take these actionable items at the end of each chapter, and I can actually apply them to real world today without making these major changes. It's just about being consistent with the things that I'm doing.
Right. And I think the other reason, honestly, I mean, it's a good read. I think the other reason the book is doing as well as it is, and it's been on the top of lists on Amazon a couple of times now, I think part of the reason for that I think it's doing so well is that it gives you the opportunity, this, although some of these things might seem obvious, you have the opportunity to ask yourself, how am I really doing on that?
Right. That's good. Right?
The next one is, as you've said many times, a fatal mistake would be to overpromise and underdeliver. So it's one thing to hear you say it. It's one thing to read it. It's another thing to ask yourself, am I really doing that? Am I overpromising and underdelivering?
I think that if people would stop and focus and listen to who they're talking to and talk and speak to them properly, and before I was in band in 4th and 5th grade, and my teacher, who was a wonderful teacher, Mr. Verricchio, who's no longer on this earth, he used to say something that, very interesting. He said, be sure that brain is engaged before putting mouth in gear. And it's true. We need to think before we speak. We want to be people pleasers, but why lie to somebody? And I'm saying that in a harsh way. And I know that people aren't intentionally lying. The problem is that you may as well call it a lie if you think of it harshly. That's great, because then you'll stop yourself from doing it. Stop promising things that you can't deliver on.
That's great. Yeah, I got that same advice from my father, but I don't think it was said quite as nicely. So the third mistake would be, which, gosh, this is such a huge problem in today's world, which is poor response time and follow-up. And I have to say, for a lot of creative entrepreneurs, follow-up is almost non-existent.
Yeah, I think when you originally had scheduled this podcast, I think one of the things that I need to get stuff off my plate. If I don't get it off my plate, it's going to delay too long, and I never want to disappoint anybody. I'd rather exceed the expectation of a response time and get back to you immediately. When I do that, people are always amazed. Wow, before I even hit the send button, you had already sent the response. So the problem that we deal with today is that I think there's an expectation from our customers' perspective, again, internal, external customers, there's a perspective that we're going to respond faster than we actually can. And if we set an expectation with our customer of what our response time is going to be, whether it's phone, email, text message, whatever it is, then I think you're safe. You know, some people, I do seminars all the time. One of the questions I ask in my seminar is if you sent out an email, if a customer sent you an email now, when does your customer want a response by? The response that I get from in the seminar is they say, well, they want it immediately. So I say, okay, well, what is your expectation? And they say, well, 24 hours to respond an email. I said, immediately we have a disconnect. If you think that you're going to respond in 24 hours and your customer thinks that you need to respond immediately, don't you think that you should tell your customer what your rules are with emails just so that they have some level of expectation? Then, you know, the response time, you can't say that I'm delayed in responding if you respond within the expected time. So for me, the response time thing, and that's, again, a small pet peeve of mine. I hate when I send an email out and number one, if I don't get a response, that's immediate. That just grates on my nerves. Just tell me you can't respond or you're not interested, but just don't ignore me because I don't even know if you got the email now.
Well, I can testify that you do respond really quickly. And I would say, you know, I do have supportive staff, but one thing we do in our company is I read I'm CC'd on everything. And I do actually read the threads. And I think people don't realize that I do because my team member, Jason, set this up. And I did see in that thread where he sent you the information and you responded immediately. He wrote back and said, wow, way to take action.
Right. Well, you know, if you set that expectation up right at the get-go, people, you know, what's really great about it, Jeff, is they want to deal with you just for no other reason than you responded quickly because they know that you're not going to be one of those guys that's going to drag things along. I have four podcasts and interviews that are scheduled today on a schedule. And I promise you that the only reason that those happened was because I was a nice guy. I returned my phone call. I returned my emails. I did the things that needed to be done and has nothing to do with my product. I mean, certainly it's great that I have a great book, but, I think it has more to do with the fact that I'm just engaging and we all need to engage.
Yeah, well said. All right, so let's move on to the fourth possible mistake, which is failure to have a system.
Whether it's a sticky note system or a to-do list, I don't really have any complicated systems that I follow. I have a yellow legal pad that sits right next to my desk. When I have something that I need to accomplish, I write it down. It's not automated. My to-do list is more of my inbox on my email. And when I know that I get through those to a certain comfortable level for me mentally, then I feel like that system is good. So on a running my business way, that's a system. I have a budget. You know, I look every time I pay a bill, I check off the little thing on the checklist. And I'm not an anal guy. I mean, I'm just not a guy that's like, oh my gosh, if it doesn't get done this way with the I's dotted and the T's crossed, it's horrible. But I am a guy that likes to follow a system, and that way I know that if something goes wrong, I have something to go back to. So yeah. Failure to have a system, you need to have something. Can I mention a really cool system that probably a lot of your listeners may not use but would really benefit them?
Would love that.
Okay, great. And I have no financial interest in this product, so I'm just giving you this little nugget of information. Let me ask you a loaded question. Where do you come up with your best ideas?
In the shower.
In the shower. Heck yeah. Your best ideas. I have this thing called Aqua Notes. It's waterproof paper and a waterproof pencil. I stick it up on the wall in my shower on the tile. If I have a great idea, I write it down. I don't have to worry about, you know, I like to just kind of zone out as I'm in the shower. And if an idea comes to me, then it gets written on Aqua Notes. So there you go.
That's awesome.
I give you that free nugget.
Well, I've taken a survey on this, and shower was the number one response. Driving was the second, which is true but scary. Yeah. But you know, my listeners have heard this repeatedly. But I'm going to take you up on your Aqua Notes because my listeners have heard me say this many times that in my previous home, I can't my current one, but my previous one, I used to keep a water soluble marker in the shower so I could write things down on the tile.
Yeah, that's great.
So your Aqua Notes is a much cleaner way of doing that.
Good.
All right. So the fifth mistake, absolutely a fatal one, seems so obvious, but you need to ask yourself, is a failure to care.
And that's the guy that's the TGI Friday, you know, the TGIF guy, the one that is waiting for Friday to come so that they can woohoo happy hour and get there. Again, loaded statement, but I say this every time I'm at a seminar and or doing a keynote. And if you're sitting next to your boss, I tell them, I said, just gently, you need to understand, if you don't like what you're doing, get out. If you are so enthralled and captivated and so waiting for the weekend to get here, you have no passion in what you're doing. And although we all like our downtime and our relax time, if that's what's driving you is to get to Friday, I don't like the emails to me that says, hey, have a great Friday. I mean, it's a great day every day. If you're alive, if you're on the right side of this earth, just enjoy your day, have a great time, reward yourself, but care about what you do. So in the seminar, I say, after the seminar, if you're not enjoying what you do, your boss would appreciate it if you would just walk up to him and say, hey, I'm really having a problem at my job. Can you either help me stay or help me leave?
You actually just helped me create a new daily mantra for myself, which is to be on the right side of the soil.
That's right. We need to be there. I agree.
Exactly. That's great. All right. So, Doug, in a moment, I am going to ask you our discovery round questions. So while you're preparing yourself for these thought-provoking questions, we're going to hear a brief message, and then we'll be right back. Hey, warrior, do you have an awesome talent but are struggling to make it in business? How great would it feel to be respected for your work and be abundantly compensated? Pretty great, of course. CreativeWarriorUnleashed.com is where you'll find a community of warriors just like you, learning the specific things you need to know when you're in business marketing yourself and your talent. Creative Warrior Unleashed is a 6-month go-at-your-own-pace coaching program with 7 training modules, complete assignments and templates, weekly coaching calls, your own personal dashboard with lifetime access, and 6 months of coaching support. You will finally have the business you want and the lifestyle of your dreams. So don't delay your success any longer. Hop on over to CreativeWarriorUnleashed.com to learn more. All right, Doug, it is time for our discovery round questions. First question, what drives you crazy?
Lateness. I hate when people are late. Oh, I can't stand it. That's the worst thing, because they throw off my entire schedule because I try to keep it close to the vest with my schedule. But when people are late, that drives me crazy.
Totally feel your pain. Second question is, looking back, what's something that you can't believe you did for your career?
Making the jump to full-time self-employment, I think that it was a scary move, but a move that needed to be done. And I look back and I am so grateful that I made this move. It was the most challenging yet the most rewarding thing that I've ever done in my life.
Is there something in common in everything that inspires you?
I try to see the good in everything. So the inspiration behind everything is, let me find what's good about it. There is good even in bad situations. Just to expand on this, just for a brief moment. My brother, who is an amazing guy, he's met with some health issues over the years, and he leading into quadruple bypass surgery on his heart. He is a guy that took a situation that could have completely kept him down, and he used it as a springboard to create this entire speaking platform on the importance of good heart health. Talk about taking something that is a terrible thing that's gone on in your life and made it something that is rewarding, because he's teaching other people how to avoid, the issues that he's had.
Fantastic. Thank you for sharing that personal story. And our last discovery round question is, imagine you are sitting around a campfire and out of the darkness appears your greatest enemy, which does not have to be a person. What inner warrior inside yourself do you call upon, and why?
Boy, that is a good one. I don't even know if I have any fears or enemies. I would say that the fear of the unknown is probably the biggest challenge. I would love to know where this book is going, and I would love to know where my speaking career is going. I would want to try to figure out what the crystal ball, has for me. So I think that if there was a way, I'm not done on this earth. I have a lot more purpose that's here. I don't want to be taken off of this earth before I get this message out. I don't have any feeling that something ill or bad is going to happen. But I feel like I want to live with a sense of urgency that things are going to really, really go in a great direction. And I got to get this message out right now.
Love that. And can completely relate. So thank you for sharing that as well. So Doug has been super generous and is offering us a fabulous ebook called The 5 Biggest Mistakes Made by Sales and Customer Service. And as always, go to creativewarriorsunite.com where you can not only get Doug's generous offer, but also the offers from all previous guests as well. And we'll make sure that all Doug's contact information, including his tip on Aquanotes, we'll make sure that's all in the show notes so you can get all the links there. Doug, thank you so much for being here, being the nice guy that you are, and spending your time with us.
My pleasure, Jeff. Thank you so much for the interview. You handle it very professionally. You're a good guy.
Thank you. Thank you for that. So that's it for now, warriors. Let's go out, create, serve, and be prosperous.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Creative Warriors. Make sure you visit our website, creativewarriorsunite.com, for more information on our online coaching program, The Creative Warrior Unleashed, to provide you with practical action steps to achieve your goals. We look forward to seeing you next time. So until then, create, serve, and be prosperous.